Hello, guys, and welcome to another late night Prem review. I'm going to be going away to the countryside for a couple of days just to recharge the old batteries after that illness. Sunday, the 16th of April. So we've had 2 weeks of games to go over. And I'm just going to come out swinging and start by taking you back in time to the 8th, where I saw the worst example of Premier League refs and what a disgrace they are. I want to talk about Tottenham's 2-1 win over Brighton. Now, just to place this into context, Tottenham are sniffing around fourth place. Probably realistically the best they can do. If they get it, it's going to be most likely at the expense of Newcastle. I feel like with the results, obviously benefit of hindsight and everything, United do feel like they're going to get top four. And, you know, when we do the end of season review, what a job Ten Hag has done. Silverware in the top four spot with that United squad is fucking unreal. That's really up there. But here's the thing. Tottenham, as it was going in, you know, 53 points. Brighton, 46. There's not a lot of difference between the two. And with, you know, 8 games left. In fact, actually, Brighton have more than that, because they had games in hand starting on this weekend, 2 of them. For me, the refs have got to be spot on this one, because there's a potential argument to make that you might have robbed Brighton of like a historical Champions League spot. Like, it could have happened. I don't think it can now, but man alive, this is the moment where those dreams get crushed, because Brighton, well, I mean, forget the fact they were just fucking robbed in general. They were by far the better team in this game. They dominated possession. They dominated chances. But the ref absolutely robbed them. Brighton had 2 goals ruled out for handball. Both of them are in that realm of technically correct. I think probably the goal, if you have to make an argument that one of them shouldn't have been ruled out, it's probably Matoma's for me. I don't know what he can do to move his hand and not make contact with it. And it was a fantastic goal without that touch. If it had touched his chest or his stomach, it would have, and his hand wasn't there, it would have probably been similarly controlled. It's clearly not intentional. There's clearly nothing you can do about it. And basically, I think the refs looked at that and thought, well, you know, it has touched his hand. The thing that pisses me off is, over the course of a season, I can't even tell you what a handball is anymore, by the way. I don't think anyone who watches the Premier League can tell you what a handball is when it happens. Like, I've seen the ball shoot up, hit somebody as they turn away, hit them on the arm. Someone goes, oh, well, he was, you know, his arm's in an unnatural position. That's a penalty. I've seen the same thing happen and someone go, oh, well, he couldn't get out the way. The commentators don't know what a handball is. And it's one of those things where it's like a 50-50 if you're a defender, but for some reason, if a ball hits your hand accidentally and it's offensively and it gives you an offensive advantage, 100% of the time it's handball. It's bullshit, and it was massively bullshit here, and it just so conspired to rob Brighton of at least one goal for me, but whatever. They had another one disallowed, which was a bit more clear-cut, I think. But then there was also this, like, super weird moment on the sideline where both managers got sent off. Remember, Spurs have got Stellini in. He's the interim manager before they make a full-time appointment. We still don't know who that's going to be, who's going to take over at Tottenham. De Zerbi, who's done a fantastic job since taking over Brighton. And it was just bizarre because, like, there was some shit going on the sideline. Everyone seemed to be involved. Except Stellini. He got a red. I don't know why. That was just completely ridiculous. Then, right at the end of the game, the VAR ref made like a mistake in the second half where they didn't give Brighton a clear penalty. And it was one of those incidents where it was Højbjerg brought down Matoma inside the box. I mean, Matoma like just had a monster game. You know, this is a clear penalty. You didn't need VAR to see it was a penalty. Matoma had a fantastic game and was just robbed by officials out of this game. So anyway, Michael Salisbury, I think it is, he was the guy that was manning the VAR booth. move. They've dropped him for a round of fixtures, meaning, you know, he won't get paid, he won't be doing a week's games. And they issued an official apology to Brighton. And it's like, guys, I don't know. I'm sick and tired of this standard where refs can just apologize. They get a little, you know, slap on the wrist, or you don't work for 1 week. You're deciding futures here, you know, and there's no excuse. If you can't use VAR, then you're a moron and you're not fit to be refereeing games. Like, what do you need? You've got, like, what, is it 4 fucking minutes? Or something like two minutes to review multiple angles on the sidelines, getting input from other people that are watching from other angles as well. Like, there's no excuse to be getting these decisions wrong unless the technology itself breaks down. Refs wanted the tools. They asked for them for years. And now that they've got them, they're so inept in the Premier League, they can't use them. And it's convinced an entire sea of idiotic fans that it's VAR is the problem. VAR is bad. It's not. VAR can make it so every game is officiated properly and every result stands as it should be. But we're employing morons to man this technology. This game, I've loved Brighton. They've been a revelation. Obviously, we were a big fan of them under Potter. I've been loving them under De Zerbi. There's been a continuation there. Their scouting is out of this world. The squad they've got is so rich. They're still bringing through, like, younger players, people that are just slotting into this system. They play good, pure, exciting football. And to see them robbed of, like, some sort of historic moment, because that fourth place spot is up for grabs, and it's up for grabs from all of those teams. You know, the Brentfords and Fulhams and the people that are in and around it. So this is awful. I mean, the Stellini sending off was sort of just weird. And obviously, that, you can't say that's against Brighton. But Brighton had nothing coming this game. It was one of those where it's like the refs just, the crowd just got in their ears. And it was absolutely shocking. On terms of the football, you know, Spurs don't deserve to win this. This was a classic Spurs performance where they do that thing where if you can play with the front three, really press and hold the defense back, you can, you know, have some good attacking moments. It wasn't even really like that. It was just Son and Kane got a goal, and when that happens, Spurs are always going to pick up a result. You add some bad refereeing into that, and this probably is the biggest robbery I've seen this season, and it probably is one of the most inexplicably bad decisions I've seen there, except maybe with the, you know, offside United, where we just invented an entirely new interpretation of the offside rule for Man United for one moment in time. That we're going to look back on that and think that's ridiculous. Now, look, unrelated, because I just want to link all the referee stuff out of the way. There was a 2-2 draw with Liverpool-Arsenal, which we're going to talk about, because looks like the bottle job might be on. Andy Robertson went up to, like, argue with an assistant referee, which, you know, he shouldn't be doing, fair enough. He was upset over something or not getting a call. And as he's walked up to the assistant ref, a guy called Konstantin Hatzidakis, he's just thrown an elbow at him, and it's hit him in the face. He just, an assistant referee has elbowed a Premier League footballer in the face in the middle of a game. Now, I cannot tell you, I can tell you, we all know how fucking apoplectic the refs were when Mitrovic put hands on. You remember when Paolo Di Canio pushed that ref and he did a comedy fucking tumble like he was in the Barnum and Bailey circus? Like, did like 200 fucking barrel rolls and they banned like Di Canio for like 12 games or whatever it was. You know, and that was embarrassing. And then when Mitrovic got pissed off because they didn't get the rub of the green in some cup games and there was some bad decisions going their way, Mitrovic put his hands on and everyone went wild, didn't he? Chris Sutton, he must be banned for the season. You can't have players manhandling refs. Oh, but we can have refs manhandling players, evidently. And you go look at the coverage, and everyone's going, well, Hatzidakis, you know, he's got carried away there. Andy Robertson shouldn't even be there talking to him, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now, fuck this. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, you're a ref. Control yourself. You know, players are running around. Their adrenaline's high. This is ultra-high stakes, you know, competitive sports. You're the referee. Like, if you can't control yourself, again, you shouldn't be in this fucking business. And so they've all turned around and said, oh, I think he's been punished enough. He's been dropped. He's going to be investigated. And everyone now is trying to walk it back. No, ban this cunt. Like, 100%. You can't have members of a refereeing team putting hands on players in the same way you can't have players putting hands on referees. It's ridiculous to create this double standard. And I tell you, it won't go to a good place if you allow that to stand. If Mitrovic has to be banned for 10 games, fucking up Fulham's season, then this guy's got to be banned for the rest of the season. He can't pick up a paycheck. He can't be an assistant ref. But of course, respect referees and, wow, we've got to try and incentivize people to become referees. No, fuck the referees. You think there aren't a million people who would love to be a Premier League referee? Like, you think there aren't a million people who are competent enough to be a Premier League referee? You think there aren't, like, ex-players, for example, that would love a chance to stay involved in the big show? And that's something that, like, I personally wouldn't feel comfortable with it because of the inherent biases that players might have. But how could they do a worse fucking job than these arseholes in the blue? But nah, this is ridiculous. Like, another week where I am utterly convinced the Premier League is, like, it is an S-tier league for football, but it is, like a C-tier league for refereeing. It's absolutely shocking, the standard. So anyway, let's pick up some more of these results from the 8th, though, because lots to talk about. Richard, you never talk about Fulham. I feel sad now that I'm going to be talking about Fulham as their season's come off the wheels. You know, they've plunged down to 10th. They're out of the running for Europe, probably, you know, predicated on the fact Brighton are still fighting. Liverpool are up there. Brentford are up there. Villa have had this late run under Emery, which, spoiler, I called that was going to happen. And, you know, they have given up results against this one, like this one, West Ham. You know, they lost 1-0 at home to West Ham. Obviously, they don't have Mitrovic in the team. And I know it feels like a bit of a lazy talking point, but I just want to give you this statistic. West Ham have been diabolically bad for the squad they've got. And they're going to stay up, but Moyes has got to go at the end of the season. West Ham had 23% possession in this game. 77% for Fulham. 16 shots, but only 3 on target. And you think if you have a big, strong target man in there like Mitrovic putting it about, you've got to think they're going to convert one or two of those. Now, listen, I think Zuma got man of the match, Kurt Zuma, the cat kicker, the prick, because he did fucking pocket a lot of the Fulham players. But Fulham are a completely different dynamic when they've got Mitrovic in there holding the ball up, bringing the midfield into play, making life difficult for defenders. Mitrovic, he Zuma alive, for fuck's sake. And so, you know, he's really let the team down with this. Like I said, I think it was 10 games, it might be 8 games. Anyway, the bottom line is him not being in the team has essentially ended this great run that Marco Silva's side has had. And in the meantime, you know, the beneficiaries just so happen to be the teams that they're playing. West Ham managed to pick up a 1-0 win. It was an own goal. It's not like even West Ham managed to score in this game. You know, just woeful amount of possession. There's certain things where I'm just not going to get into it again, but like Rice was dog shit. 150 mil player, like, you know, he was terrible in this game. Couldn't keep the ball, super reliant on basically what they were doing in defense, really, and occasionally Antonio when they had an outlet. You know, I sat through this game, it was trash. But Fulham, yeah, just you know, season's kind of over. It's still been an unbelievably successful season for Fulham. They've got zero chance of going down. They're probably going to get mid-table mediocrity and just finish outside of the European placement places. But considering they were newly promoted, I mean, you know, hell of a run. You got to give it to them. I think as well, while I brought them up, Villa. This will give me 2 gloating points that I will be talking about come the end of the season. But Aston Villa under Emery have completely transformed. He has took a very mediocre squad, in my opinion, and he has figured out how to get the most out of it, which Emery is a very, like, cultured, you know, manager, and he likes to play that continental style of football. But one thing I'll say that he's done here when he's come into Villa is he has taken Ollie Watkins and he has basically shaped an entire system around getting Ollie Watkins in for the first chance. Watkins has had an insane goal scoring run. You know, he needs to be called up to the England squad, you know, for the next set of friendlies. To put it in context, I think with the win over Newcastle, which you don't want to talk about too much, but whatever the fuck. They won like six games in a row for the first time since 1998. Obviously, Villa in the 90s had like a decent squad, but they've also done like 12 wins in 18 games, I think it is now. Like, Emery has took the shit that Gerrard was serving up every week. And, it's the same players. It's not like he went out and brought the bank and brought in a bunch of players. He's just found a system that works. And basically, this is how it goes, right? Ollie Watkins sits on the shoulder of a defender. He is so rapid over a very short space. You know, he's like a burst runner. So he gets on the shoulder, and then you're looking at your McGinn's, Douglas Luiz, Buendia, and what they're looking to do is just play these balls in behind the defender. Spin the defender, that's what you do. You make the defender have to turn around and run. And in that distance, because, Watkins knows it's coming, because this is a tactical decision, Watkins will always have the advantage over the defender who's got to turn, and is playing with his back to goal and then has to spin around to catch him. And when Watkins has been in, historically, he's missed. Now Watkins is scoring scrappy goals, scuffy goals. They're not good-looking goals. They're not nice. They're not clean. But, go look at fucking Haaland. Who cares? He goes in the back of the net. It's like Moneyball. He gets on base. Like, it's as simple as that. And so Watkins has had, some really, like, scruffy, ugly goals trickling across the line. No finesse, no power. But he's getting in. He's getting those chances. And now John McGinn has, like, had this transformative aspect to his game in the second half of the season. And up against Forest here, which was who they played, it was 2-0 to Villa. Clinical performance, like, and so many chances created by Villa. Again, it was a dominant possessive performance. They had a lot of chances. They had about 10 chances overall. And, they haven't hit the target a lot, but they're solid enough at the back. I mean, I don't need to get into Mings seems to have got over his issues and is leading the back line now very well. But look, after Southampton, the team you want to play now in the league is Forest, for sure. Forest are garbage. I called that they would be relegated right from the start of the season, where even when they were as high as 13th, it never won me over. They've got two players that are actually playing decent Premier League football, and they carved out some points early on through the auspices of those players, but now the reality is set in, and Forest have been the statistically worst attacking team in the league and the worst team on the road in the league. You can't stay in the Premier League like this, and they're not going to pick up points. And there was a moment, I want to say, when everyone was backslapping him and Cooper was coming out with his shit-eating grin and doing all these press conferences. And it's like, you signed 30 players. Like, you signed, like, an entire fucking squad, essentially, to stay in the Prem. And you're not going to do it. So I don't know what you're all laughing about. They're not laughing now. I don't know what you're all chuckling about. It was always going to be hard. And Cooper's got to take the blame because, if you sign, I'm probably exaggerating with 30, but it was like, I want to say like 23 players. If you sign that many players and completely beef up your championship squad, and then you still can't, get it done, that you're not up to the standard, you're not up to Premier League standard in terms of attacking, in terms of chances created, XG, all that shit, it's nonsense. You're always going to go down. It's why I was never fooled. 13th was just like one of those little streaks you have, and because it's so tight in the bottom half, it'll temporarily elevate you and people think you're better than what you are. Now they're better than Southampton. Southampton have given up. I mean, Southampton are down. I can't see a world where Southampton turn it around. But for me right now, they don't even have the luxury that Leicester have, and Leicester look to have given up, but Leicester have just got a better caliber of player. So this has all aged very well for me. Emery as a manager, when he was at Arsenal, his lack of success at Arsenal was about the transitional Arsenal and not about Emery. He was always a better manager than Arsenal treated him. And you know what? I don't like Villa. I live in Birmingham. All my friends are Blues. So, shit on the Villa, etc., etc. But for Emery's sake, if Villa squeeze back into Europe, it's looking like they can do it. If they keep this form up, yeah. And obviously, as I said, I won't get into them, but they beat Newcastle 3-0. fuck our lives. Watkins with two goals again. Like, he's on something insane, like 14 goals in the last 16 games. Fuck it. Like, you gotta hand it to them. That down the back straight, they've been playing some of the best football in the league, and Emery has found a sweet spot of maximising this. Board will back him with money in the off-season, and, you know, Villa, they can cement themselves back as, like, a top six team. They make the right purchases, and, you know, the likes of Brighton, Brentford and Fulham fall off, you know, who knows, like, and I'd welcome it, because the clowns at Chelsea don't deserve to be anywhere near Europe ever again with what they've done with their spending. Quickly as well, just to talk about Bournemouth. Don't really talk about them, and I'm showing that kind of like big club bias in these videos. But Bournemouth have had a little late resurgence. They beat Leicester 1-0. It is a huge result for Bournemouth. And, you know, this game was even Stevens right down the middle, you know, 50-50 on possession. Very similar amount of chances created. But, of course, the key difference is who's meant to be the team that have got the guys with the reputations. I know they've sacked the manager. Leicester seem to be the only guys who sacked the manager and then didn't get a honeymoon period after sacking a manager. You know, they don't seem to be doing well at all. And as I said, people are giving up. Vardy's a sick joke. Madison's gone at the end of the season. Probably Iheanacho too. Probably Harvey Barnes as well. And then suddenly, that's it. You know, 7 years ago, you're winning the Prem in one of the biggest stories ever in sports history. Then now you're getting relegated and going to lose the players that made you stand out and made you not look so ordinary. It's crazy what's happened to Leicester and how they've been mismanaged. But they had to get Rodgers out quicker. I mean, that was another thing that we said on this show, right? He had to go. He needed it. Rodgers is a fraud. He was on fraud watch from the first fucking 6 weeks into the league. The funny part is as well, Jesse Marsh was linked with this. Yank Lampard apparently turned this job down. So imagine that. Imagine turning down a team that won a Premier League in the past decade, and you, an upcoming American manager who's just lost his job at Leeds, you're knocking this club back, are you? So that's how bad they are. I mean, they got problems. There's rumours. They got no money for a rebuild. It's going to be very, very tough. I've always said it is harder to get out the Championship than it is to stay in the Prem. I've always believed that. The games come at you thick and fast. You know, you don't get no mercy on the international breaks. You know, you go to places where, you know, it's a tough atmosphere. The players play for the home fans. They kick the shit out of you. It's hard getting out the Championship. And Leicester, if they do go down, they could be one of those teams that you don't see for a while. Kind of in the same way that Leeds, you know, speaking of Leeds, they went for a long, long time. You know, 1 minute it was Champions League semi-finals. The next minute it was fucking what happened to Leeds, you know? Think about Portsmouth, you know, going to cup finals, and then where are they now? You know, it can happen in the blink of an eye, especially if you've spent big and then the money dries up. Can be tough. Bournemouth, just to talk about them, I mean, I thought, like, Ryan Christie was fucking unreal in this game, and I'll tell you, the players that have stood out for me for Bournemouth, Solanke and Tavernier have just been fucking unreal. I mean, like, really, really good, solid players, like, chasing everything, you know, getting to those second balls, putting themselves about. And, yeah, I mean, like, Bournemouth picking up a win here, and then, you know, as we'll get to in a second, another win. That's suddenly 6 points when you're in the bottom three. They've jumped up. They're on 30 points now. Probably, as I said, because, you know, Southampton, I don't see Southampton winning again. They're down 23, Leicester on 25, Forest on 27, Everton on 27. So, you know, realistically, you're probably going to stay up like 33, 34 points. These teams are getting there now. And West Ham are knocking on the door, and Palace are knocking on the door. Bournemouth are up there with them. Wolves beating Chelsea, they're knocking on the door to be safe. And suddenly, there's a real short list of names that can go down. And Bournemouth might not be on it. Fantastic turnaround when it was needed. Anyway, got to start talking about the bottle job. Oh, yes. Is the bottle job on? Have I jinxed it? I did say that I think Arsenal, that they've got two games left. Liverpool and City, and if they get results in those games, they're going to be all right. And I honestly had Arsenal beating Liverpool, but they didn't. They're doing this thing at the moment, Arsenal, where they come out in the first half for the first 30 minutes and their intensity is unreal. Full press, playing super high up the park, into channels, midfield, flooding the box. It's unbelievable. They blew Liverpool out of the water in the first 30 minutes. Martinelli scores in the first 10. Jesus gets one at like 28 about there. And then they just suddenly took their foot off the accelerator, and I don't know why. There was this bullshit segment on Match of the Day where they were saying, oh, well, Granit Xhaka squared up to Trent Alexander-Arnold, and this motivated Liverpool to play more and work the crowd up. Like, shut the fuck up. They were so desperate for a narrative angle on that episode. I don't think that made any difference. What definitely does make a difference is if you suddenly take your foot off the accelerator pad and don't play for possession and you don't go in for those second balls, and you're not playing high up the park. Now, I've had a theory rumbling around in my own head where I'm wondering if, you know, Jesus is coming back, and I know he's match fit ostensibly now, but I'm wondering if they're doing something where they are playing with a little bit less intensity because maybe they can't run him ragged so much. Like, it doesn't seem to be an issue. Like, Martinelli and Saka are still dominating games, you know, they're still playing really well. Like, Martinelli was easily the man of the match against Liverpool, best player on the park by a million miles. I mean, maybe Partey, I suppose, was a little bit off the pace here. Odegaard, you know, it's real hard to pinpoint where it kind of went wrong. I mean, Xhaka didn't have a great game and didn't cover himself in glory, but like, basically Liverpool just started to get more and more into the game. You know, Alisson made some very, very good saves, it's got to be said as well. And then it was Ramsdale's turn at the other end when Liverpool really started to come into it. And Liverpool at home, it was a classic Anfield performance in the sense that they generated, you know, so much in terms of attacking, 21 shots. You know, they were really in Arsenal's face in that second half and really dominated the play. Overall, coming out with a point, especially as it was saved super late. I mean, you know, Ramsdale made a save right at the end, which is like, it basically bought Arsenal a point. And they were super, like, over the moon with it. But, you know, it's okay. A point at Liverpool. If you say to Arsenal, right, you know, you can be 6 points clear, game in hand. You've got Liverpool to play. You pick up a point. You know, obviously, you're going to be all right with that. But the problem is that I'll just fast forward now ahead to today. And basically, they fucking completely bottled it against West Ham. And it was the same thing. It was a fucking carbon copy. Arsenal come out super intense, 2 goals within 10 minutes, nearly scored within like 30 seconds. It was like just unbelievable, like just straight out there, so high tempo. And then for whatever reason, they just started to ease off. West Ham get a goal back from a penalty. It was an inarguable penalty. But then Arsenal get a penalty and up steps Saka, right? And this would settle the nerve. I think if they score this penalty, they win this game and conceivably win the league. I don't know what it is with managers making Saka take penalties, but you're going to kill this kid. He's still not the finished article yet. He's probably the best winger in the world, just in terms of technical ability and his complete skill set. There's no doubt there, but he's still a young kid and he's still learning his craft and he's still learning what it is to be in these big game experiences and to be in title races. It's the first time he's been part of a title race. You know, this Arsenal team has matured well ahead of schedule. You know, we were talking top four at the start of the season. Now if they blow this title, everyone's going to go, oh, well, you're never going to get another one. You know, and the psychological damage it's going to do to this squad, if they do bottle this league, it's going to be like nothing you've ever seen. I mean, some of these players will never recover from it, like, mentally, you know. And I don't know how many more times, like, Saka is not a penalty taker, man. Like, just leave the kid alone, you know. I'm not, like, I don't know who you want to pick, but, like, Arsenal probably don't have a great selection of penalty takers. But I'm probably going with Jesus. Been there, done that with City. Like, for me, just let him take it. Saka stepping up. He's been the designated Arsenal penalty taker for a while, and he just overthought it, tried to be too cute with the bend. Then it's gone wide, and then obviously, you know, West Ham, they were dominant after that point. Arsenal's head went down, and you've got to give credit to West Ham at that point. They could sense Arsenal were feeling a bit sorry for themselves, you know, a bit wounded. And suddenly, they've done this thing again where they've had, like, next to no possession this game. But unlike in the game where they managed to sort of scuff a win against Fulham, they managed to get more shots than Arsenal. 28% possession, 16 shots compared to 72 and 11. And so that tells you the Arsenal defence was shook. West Ham were sort of playing in and around their box. They were making chances for themselves. And right at the death, I think Antonio hit like the cross section where the crossbar meets the post. And it could have been a complete turnaround and complete disaster. Now, where does this leave Arsenal overall in terms of, is it going to be a bottle job? I know everyone on my Discord is salivating. We got some City fans in there, you know, and they're all salivating saying they're 100% going to bottle it. Now, they're still in a position where if you look at the games they've got left, it really is all about City. Surely they're going to beat Chelsea. Surely. I mean, it's a hard running. Like, you know, no doubt about it. Like, out the two teams, Arsenal and City, who's got the harder running? It's Arsenal for sure. Like, they've had the easy games. You know, they've got West Ham. Liverpool, they should have beat. Right? Now they've got Southampton at home. Well, that's got to be a win. Then it's City. Right? Well, they've got to win that now. Then it's Chelsea. You know, Chelsea are dog shit, and they know it, but it's a London derby. Then Arsenal are away to Newcastle. Well, you know, we always want to fucking, you know, win, and we're in for a top four spot, so we've got it. And then Arsenal have to play Brighton, and then it's, you know, Forest and Wolves, I think, are their last two games. So you've got a tough run round the corner. This is the breaking point for Arsenal. If they lose to City, drop points against Chelsea or Newcastle, I think it is over. I think they will have bottled it, and I think it's going to hurt in a way, you know, that I don't think those players are ready for. And I just can't see City dropping points. Like, look at the run City's got after Arsenal. They got Fulham with no Mitrovic. They got West Ham. Could even be safe by that point, West Ham. They've got Leeds. By the way, those are both home games for City. They've got Everton. Then they've got Chelsea. And you go, you know what? Yeah. Other than the Arsenal game, I can't see City losing again. So this is where you have to grab it by the scruff of the neck. And I don't know, guys. Like, I was fully confident, but that was with Arsenal beating Liverpool and, of course, beating West Ham. Dropping 4 points in those two games completely changes the complexion of the league for me. Anyway, some of the results that have been coming in. As I said, I'm not going to talk about Villa, Newcastle, whatever the fuck, who cares. First, because I brought them up, we'll get Brighton beating Chelsea out the way. Chelsea again. I mean, this Lampard appointment is just absolutely shocking what they've done by putting Lamps in. I mean, I just don't get it. Like, I don't know. They look worse than they did under Potter. After this, Brighton and Hove Albion loss, you know, they took the lead against Gallagher. They had a bunch of chances, but Brighton just played them off the park, if we're being real about it. Chelsea could have probably got a draw out of it, but, you know, they managed 2 shots on target, and it's, guys, this is going to go down as the maddest thing ever that you didn't buy a striker. Meanwhile, Brighton had 26 shots, 10 of which were on target. And it was just day and night. Chelsea are in a position now where it's like they're playing these teams that are like top eight, and Chelsea look like the underdog. And they've spent $600 million to look like this. And they're going to have to offload a bunch of players. And also, it's got to be said, I mean, like, Kepa again was like a standout for me in the Chelsea games I've watched. You know, which, when you keep, with a squad like this and your keeper's the standout, there's going to have to just be a wholesale job. I mean, how can you spend all this money and it's like Gallagher's your best player? You know, like, Kepa's your best player. It's ridiculous. Like, it's embarrassment. There's talk that Mason Mount's going to go to Liverpool. I don't know why anyone would want to pick up Mason Mount at the moment. But, again, English international, so everyone's going to massively overrate him. But yeah, Chelsea look dog shit, absolutely woeful. And Lampard is, I don't get why you've given this guy a job. Chelsea are 11th in the league with £600 million spent. I mean, it's the biggest Premier League failure of all time. And as I said, I'm super glad for Brighton because they were robbed in that Tottenham game, and that's that. But yeah, let's talk about Everton quickly. Making it hard on themselves. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that Leicester, you know, they got battered by City 3-1 and they can't buy a win right now, and Southampton can't buy a win, and Forest have played themselves into it. But the transformative Sean Dyche Brexit ball, definitely not working. The Fulham game was embarrassing. You know, it's Everton. You're at home. You are fighting for your Premier League life. This historic run of being in the top flight. And Fulham absolutely got to do things that you just can't let teams do when you're fighting like this. Like, Fulham got to have so many touches in the Everton box. They got to win so many second balls. Like, for the first goal, right, the ball comes in, they have a shot, it hits the post, it bounces back out. A Fulham player wins the tackle, lays it off to another Fulham player who's unmarked and gets the shoot. How the fuck are you going to allow that? I know Sean Dyche will be absolutely furious with his defenders in this game because they were all at sea. They were at sixes and sevens. It's one of the worst defensive performances I've seen probably this season. If you go and watch it, every time Fulham went forward, they could get the ball into the box. Every time they had the ball in the box, there was an option in the box. Like, what is going on? Like, what are you doing? Are you playing zonal? Are you going man? Are you picking up runners? What are your defensive midfielders doing? Why are they not tracking back? This is fundamental stuff. Like, and listen, it's not like Sean Dyche isn't telling his boys not to do it. But, I mean, his boys aren't doing it. And they need a rocket up their ass. Because, yeah, all right, you're outside of the bottom three here. I mean, just because we're talking about runs that are left. You know, I want Sean Dyche to do it. I want him to keep him up. But the Everton run's tough. I mean, you got Crystal Palace away. You got Newcastle. You got Leicester. That's a fucking game of death now, isn't it? You know, Bruce Lee's game of death right there. You got Brighton away. You got City at home. You got Wolves away. And then you got another six-pointer against Bournemouth at home. So Everton, these points that they've let go in these last few games, it's despicable that there are players sort of languishing and walking around, especially given that Fulham now, as I said, I just think their season's sort of over. You know, they can't really get into Europe. It would be a bit of a miracle at this point if they were able to do it, especially without Mitrovic. And Dyche's post-match was weird. I've got a quote here. He said, "The mentality has been really good and there has been a big shift since I've been here. What we don't want is it to revert back to that feeling from before I got here. And there was a sign of that today. People dipped too quickly. We want that bravery to take games on. I reminded the players that no one gives you anything. Don't think that they will because they won't. We should react to that a lot better. And we have done generally. But these are important times. So we've got to make sure we correct that very quickly." And I'm like, you know what, Sean? I'm sure you know what you're doing. I respect you, mate. But I'd be livid. That's not enough for me to say, guys, no one's going to give you anything in the Premier League. You've been in the bottom three for most of the season. You've only just started turning it round. You're playing a team whose season is effectively over. I know they're a good team. I know they're a better team than you. But you're at home and you've got to dig deep. And you're giving away goals by losing second balls. And you're losing second balls in your own box. Fuck this. There has to be more fire at Everton. Because honestly, looking at the teams realistically that are in the dogfight now, Bournemouth are up to 33. Wolves hit 34. They're probably safe. Palace are on 36. They are safe. It's Leeds, Everton, Forest, Leicester, Southampton. And when I watch Leeds play, and I watch Leeds get demolished 5-1 at Palace, you know, but when I watch Leeds play, I believe they give a shit. They run, you know, they're just bad at defending. They're just actually bad at defending. Like, you know, they're trying. But when I watch Southampton play, when I watch Leicester play, they've just given up. When I watch Forest play, they're bad at attacking. And when I watch Everton play, it's a coin toss. I don't know if I'm going to get Lampard's Everton or if I'm going to get Sean Dyche's Burnley. I don't know who's turning up. If it's the latter, they can get a result. If it's the former, they're fucked. So It's a crazy, crazy relegation battle right now. But anyway, there you go. That was the Prem review. Enjoy it. Leave your comments down there. Remember, for the end of the season, we're going to do a review of all the predictions and all of the stuff that I said. But on top of that, we're also going to, maybe for the last couple of weeks, we're going to organise a phone-in, a Premier League phone-in, a trash talk phone-in. So that'll be rad. So hope you're in for that. Anyway, whichever team you support, make sure you keep the nerves, keep it clean, keep it straight, keep it fucking on the level. Because it is tense times. Arsenal are up for a bottle job. City are going to come back maybe and win a title sort of out of nowhere. Liverpool, mid-table mediocrity. Chelsea floundering after £600 million spent. And if you're in one of those, if you support one of those teams down in the dogfight, it's squeaky bum time. As I said, there's five or six teams that realistically can go down with seven games left in the league. So anyway, there you go. Prem review. See you on the next one. Until then, take care.